Do you love fashion? Do you love getting compliments on how well you're dressed? Are you always seeking the latest trends? Then we're talking to you. BostonProper.com is your fashion destination and the only place to go for all those nods, head turns, and new styles. No matter the day, season, or occasion, Boston Proper has what you're looking for. Sophisticated, confident clothing designed to flatter and get noticed. So visit BostonProper.com now and start creating your perfect wardrobe. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey everybody, it's me, Josh, and for this week's Select, I've decided it's time for a rousing bout of goofy history with our 2015 episode on the Nazis who invaded the United States during World War II. I won't give anything away, but suffice to say, it's the kind of topic that records itself. So, relax, let me give you a quick shoulder rub there, very nice, and enjoy this classic Stuff You Should Know app.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Jerry's over there. This is Stuff You Should Know. Okay, ready for this?
I'm ready.
We're going to channel our stuff you missed in history class.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they've done this or not. Are you?
I don't know.
So, Chuck, I don't know if you know this one because it didn't come up in this article. But back in World War II, did you know that the Japanese actually carried out bombing campaigns, two of them, in Oregon?
I did know that.
Oh, you did?
I'm a bit of a buff.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of forgotten history or little-known history that you read it. And thank God for, like, the internet, because someone will post an article and say, I bet you never knew this.
Yeah.
And then you're like, what?
Yeah. That's pretty much the function of the internet, what you just described, you know?
Sure.
So this one, I think I learned about this from, unsurprisingly, Uncle John's Bathroom Reader years and years and years ago.
Oh, yeah?
But definitely not in this kind of detail. It turns out that in World War II, in 1942, I believe, in Amagansett, New York, which is on Long Island, and Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, which is just south of Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Nazi saboteurs landed. They invaded America.
Yeah. Pretty remarkable.
It really is. What's even more remarkable is how badly their operations went.
Yeah. What's remarkable is, well, not remarkable. What's, thankfully, they chose a bunch of dopes.
Half-hearted dopes.
Half-hearted dopes who... I don't know if they didn't do their research. We'll get into how they pick these schmoes.
Yeah.
But it didn't go so well.
No, it really didn't.
But if they had to pick some, like, the right guys, it might have been a whole different story.
Oh, yeah, totally.
In this war.
And the FBI, and especially J. Edgar Hoover, really lucked out that these guys were half-hearted dopes.
Well, not if you ask him.
No. He might as well have worn a cape around the office.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he may have, and little else.
So, back in World War II, even before World War II, or before the U.S. entered the Second World War, Hitler had this great fantasy of sending New York City up in flames.
Yeah.
Like, he really wanted to just destroy New York. And Wernher von Braun, the guy who helped get America to the moon, was working on a rocket program that could strike the United States from Europe. That was one thing, never fully realized.
No.
Because the war came to an end before they could develop the right kind of missile. But they were working on it.
Yeah.
And they were also working on long-range bombers that could fly out of Europe all the way to America's East Coast and bomb.
Yeah, apparently Hitler used to literally sit around and watch, like, film footage of cities burning and like fantasize about New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Yeah, well, he was pretty crazy.
Sure.
But he finally realized that, like, if he was going to get New York, mm-hmm. the best, most efficient, most at-hand way to do that was to send saboteurs into the United States to infiltrate and do New York themselves.
That's right.
You know?
Terrorists, essentially.
Well, yeah. The only thing that kept them from being considered full-fledged just straight-up terrorists is because we were formally at war with this country. So
yeah.
they were considered officially spies and unofficially saboteurs.
Yes. Should we shout out the articles here?
Yes, let's.
Right off the bat. I read a few. I read one on Damned Interesting, which was good. There was one you sent called World War II, German Saboteurs Invade America in 1942.
Yeah, that was on HistoryNet.
HistoryNet,
yep.
And I feel like there was one more.
There was a Der Spiegel article.
Oh, yeah, that's one I looked at.
Called Operation Pastorius, Hitler's Unfulfilled Dream of a New York in Flames.
Yeah.
Poor Hitler.
I know. His dreams failed. So World War II hadn't been raging for long for the U.S. when this happened. It was right after Pearl Harbor was bombed, and Hitler said, you know what, they think they're over there. They're a long way from us, so they probably feel pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
So let me undermine that, and let me devise this plan. And it was originally going to be a wave of saboteurs, like
right.
every 4 to 6 weeks. They were going to be sending in small teams of terrorists/spies
right.
to wreak havoc on the U.S. And thankfully, it didn't work out that way, so it was kind of scrapped.
Yeah, the Abwehr, I think that's how you pronounce it. You're the one who knows German.
Abwehr.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So that was the sabotage unit of the German military intelligence corps. And these guys had kind of perfected their craft with explosives and
sure.
terrorism and all that jazz
yeah.
in European theaters already in the war. And so they set up a school, a terrorist school, which supposedly these guys were trained in like jiu-jitsu as well as explosives and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'll bet it looked a lot like Enter the Dragon in there, but with Germans, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if they were trained...
Like a kung fu school on an island somewhere, but this is in the woods.
I wonder if they... In the Black Forest, perhaps?
Yeah.
I wonder if they were trained in pinochle and movie watching and car buying.
I think that just came naturally.
And rolling over and singing like a canary.
So the Abwehr selected a man. His name was Walter Kapp, or is that Cappy?
It'd be Walter Kapp.
Well, Walter Kapp, who was a pudgy, bull-necked man, as described in the HistoryNet article. And the reason that they selected him to head up this operation, which Kapp came to nickname as Operation Pastorius, which is named after Francis Daniel Pastorius, one of the early German immigrants to the United States
yeah.
who arrived in Philadelphia in 1683. The reason they selected Kapp for this operation was because he had lived in America for 12 years already. So
yeah.
he understood America, how it functioned, what targets should be struck, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And they said, select your teams.
Yeah. And so he put a donkey on the wall and got a tail with a little pin on it.
Right.
No, what he did was he did some research and he went through the records of something called the Auslan Institute.
Yeah.
And they were big on getting Germans back to Germany.
Right, ones that had emigrated to the United States. Once
all over
war
the
broke
world.
Out.
Yeah.
Okay, so specifically the ones he was looking for were ones who had been in the United States.
Yeah, in this case.
And a lot of these people had been in what was called the Bund, or is it the Bund?
I would say it's a Bund, the American Bund, which
okay.
was like basically the Nazi sympathizers in the United States.
Right.
And they would set up little shops all over the country.
Yeah, and they would speak out against Franklin Roosevelt
sure.
and speak in favor of fascism. And apparently they managed to get 20,000 people at a rally at Madison Square Garden once.
By holding a Knicks game?
Pretty much. I don't think the Knicks could even get 20,000 people to come out to Madison Square. But they were so unpredictable and radical here in the United States that even the Nazi Party officially distanced itself from these guys in
well,
the Bund.
Yeah, officially.
Unofficially, they recruited from their ranks, sure, specifically for Operation Pastorius.
Yeah, so what he found some blue-collar dudes. All but two of them had been Nazi Party members, which was a good start. Four dropped off right off the bat, and that left them with what would be eight dudes, which they divided up into two teams of four.
Right.
One leader on each side and then three dopes below them.
With Cap at the head of the whole thing.
Yeah, even though he didn't come over to the United States for the operation. He was just sort of running the training initially.
Yeah, and he was watching them do jiu-jitsu.
I guess so. So here,
I mean, isn't that hilarious? Germans yeah, doing jiu-jitsu
well,
in the
not
woods?
Really. I don't think so.
It just seems a little like, you know, neighborhood ninja camp kind of stuff, you know?
Well, they had to train in some sort of hand-to-hand combat.
No, they're saboteurs. They're not. They don't need to know that. They're supposed to know how to blow up a bridge.
Yeah, but what if they get caught in the middle? They got to, like,
turn and run away.
Jiu-jitsu somebody down.
No, you just run if you're a saboteur.
Well, that's some foreshadowing right there. So here are the players on team one. We'll call it team Eintz. How about that?
Is that one?
Sure.
Okay.
On team Eintz, you had the leader, George John Dosh, and he was 39. He was the oldest guy. And
he was so old.
I know, 39. And he was picked because he was a smooth talker, and he was apparently just seemed very American, which was, if you're going to stick some Germans over there to be saboteurs, it's probably good if they can pass themselves off as just regular, good German-Americans.
Right. Plus, also, you have the added benefit of not having to teach them to speak colloquial English.
Sure.
And they already know the terrain. They know the culture.
Where's Coney Island?
Right.
I want a hot dog.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they were all good.
Right.
Yeah.
Was that Count Dracula?
No. That was my German saboteur.
I got you. So that's why they went with the guys who had already spent time in America. Plus, it also showed a pretty significant loyalty to your homeland, the fatherland in this case.
Yeah.
Where when war breaks out, you go back to where the war is being fought,
sure,
to support it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're like selecting from the Auslands Institute roles of emigrants who were also Bund members. It seemed like a knock it out of the park group of guys.
Yeah. So Dosh, he was he actually did, like you said, served in the German army in World War I, came to America, worked as a waiter, and then in 1939 said, you know what, duty calls, I'm going back home.
Right.
The second guy on the first team, Ernest Peter Berger, he was supposedly a smart guy, and he had an interesting story because he had long been a Nazi since, they said, as long as Hitler himself had been a Nazi.
Yeah, he was part of the beer hall push.
Yeah, he was early adopter.
He was.
Of Nazism.
He really was. And he actually had fled Germany for the United States because he was afraid he was going to get brought up on brawling charges.
That's right.
He liked to fight.
Yeah, and he stayed there for about 6 years and then worked as a machinist in the Midwest. He even joined the National Guard, the U.S. National Guard.
Yeah.
And became an American citizen.
Yep. And then he went back after Hitler gained power, right?
Well, he went back mainly because of the Great Depression.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, but I mean, it coincided, but he was like, yeah, this place stinks now.
Yeah, and Hitler's in power. I'm going to go become a brown shirt and rough up people on the street, which is what he did.
Pretty much.
Because he really did love to fight. And the brown shirts were purged in the Night of the Long Knives by Hitler and his cronies.
Yeah.
And Berger was, it was Berger, right? Yeah. He managed to not be killed,
yeah,
during that purge.
Yeah. So he was working with his buddy Ernst Röhm of the stormtroopers, like serious business.
Right. And Röhm was actually killed during the purge.
Oh, he was?
Oh, yeah. They put a pistol in his cell with him and gave him 10 minutes to kill himself.
Yeah.
And he said, if you want me dead, Adolf's going to have to do it himself. And they came back, and
with Hitler?
He was standing there, right? And Hitler's like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And the guy was standing there with his shirt off with his chest bared to him.
Yeah.
Supposedly, and they just shot him in the chest point blank.
Yeah.
And the head of the brown shirts went down.
So that didn't work out for him.
No, but Berger did survive this.
Yeah, he did survive and went off to college, but then he wrote a paper about the Gestapo that was not too favorable, and he got sent to a concentration camp for his efforts. For 17 months.
Right. And then when he was released, they said, you can come out, but you have to go off with the army.
Yeah. They harassed his wife. It was, I don't know that he was the best pick.
Right.
Like, now that I think about it.
This guy that we've antagonized and thrown in prison and then forced into the army.
Sure.
We also killed his boss.
Yeah. Harassed his wife.
We'll trust him as a saboteur.
Yeah, as a team of one of eight.
Right. So Berger is the right-hand man to Dosh's team on Team Einz?
Team Einz.
E-I-N-Z?
E-I-N-Z.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And then there were two other dudes, Heinrich Heinck, right?
That's a great name.
And Richard Quirin.
Yes.
And they were a couple of machinists who They'd been in America for a while, came back, and were selected for this team.
Yeah, basically, they went back to Germany, started working at Volkswagen, and, I guess we're probably eager to leap on a top-secret job like this.
Sure.
It's probably appealing to these guys.
Right.
You know?
So that was Team Einz. We'll talk about Team...
Zwei.
Yeah. Right after this.
Yeah.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Looking for a fabulous fashion brand that celebrates you? Then look no further than Boston Proper, where styles are designed with you in mind. So you can look and feel amazing, no matter the day, season, or occasion. At bostonproper.com, you'll find fashion that knows you best. For over 30 years, Boston Proper has been the fashion destination for confident women who want to elevate their look with unique, sophisticated clothing at affordable prices. Visit bostonproper.com today. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. So, Chuck, tell us about the smiling faces on Team Zwei.
Well, Josh, Team Zwei was led by a man named Edward Curling, or Edward, I guess.
Who is, I take it, is the only competent person in this entire mission.
Yeah, he seemed like it, right?
Kind of.
A little more than the rest?
Yeah. Comparatively speaking, he seemed like a criminal genius.
Yeah, that's a good point. So he was also had gone to America in 1929 to work, married a German woman there, and then they worked together as butler and cook for a little while, and then he said, you know what, I don't like you anymore. I think I want an American woman.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that. And then when the war broke out, he tried to sail to Germany.
Right.
So I'm not sure if he was a mastermind either, now that I think about it.
Well, he showed a lot of initiative.
Well, good point.
And he was turned back by the Coast Guard, but he finally made it to Germany in 1940, and he ended up working at the Ministry of Propaganda.
Yeah, I guess with Goebbels, huh?
Yeah.
Sure.
And when he tried to sail to Germany that one time, he actually had a guy with him named, was it Herbert Neubauer, I believe?
Oh, was Neubauer on his boat?
Yeah, he was on that crew.
Ah.
And so he would have been turned back as well. So
so he was a natural fit.
Right.
And they knew each other.
And Curling actually recommended Herman Neubauer to be part of the team.
He's like, he can hoist a sail.
Yeah. What else do you need to know? He was in the Bund. Who cares?
There was the youngest member of his crew at 22 was Herbert Haupt. And he moved to the U.S. when he was just 5 years old. And so I don't know that he was a great choice because he was practically American.
Yeah, and
he
was also not so smart. Or let me put it this way.
Experienced? He was not experienced.
Right, a little green.
Yeah.
A little wet behind the ears.
Sure.
And then the last guy, Werner Thiel, he, surprise, surprise, was a member of the Bund. And he was working in a war plant. So just this weird hodgepodge ragtag group of guys were selected. Only two people out of the whole original 12 had been in the military.
Yeah, this sounds like a movie in the making.
Oh, yeah.
But it just, if it would have had a great third act, it probably would already be a movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it is lacking a third act.
I imagine, like, when if someone had tried to develop this, they're like, this sounds great so far. It's going great. And then, oh, that's how it ends?
Yeah. Shelf it.
Yeah.
So these guys are put together. They're sent to the Abwehr school.
Yeah.
To learn jiu-jitsu.
Sure.
And the oldest guy, George Dosh, is like, low kick, low kick. Oh, my hip.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they were also studying, like, explosive techniques. And,
right, wiring.
Not just explosive jiu-jitsu techniques.
Right.
But real explosives.
Right.
Yeah.
Wiring, detonation, timers, all of this stuff. They got to go on field trips to power plants and bridges and canals,
yeah,
and see like where the weak points were. And all of this took place over an intensive 18 days of training. That's it. They got 18 days of training.
Yeah. And apparently Dosh, the leader of Team Eins, wasn't even, I read one account that said he basically kind of snoozed through most of it,
no,
which would go on to explain a few things later.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
18 days and you can't even stay awake to learn how to blow something up.
Seriously. All right, on May 23rd, they were given their assignment. And these were, I mean, this was pretty smart, the assignments were. They had a good plan in place. Small teams of dudes. Dosh's team was assigned to destroy quite a few things. Hydroelectric plants at Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
The Aluminum Company of America, the factory in Illinois, Tennessee, New York.
Yeah, three plants.
And the Philadelphia Salt Company's cryolite plant, which apparently supplies raw materials for aluminum.
Right, and the reason they wanted to go after aluminum was because aluminum production in the United States, the output was greater than all of Europe's, both sides, Axis and, or no, I'm sorry, all of the Axis's aluminum production put together. And aluminum is a very, very valuable thing during war. You use it to make aircraft frames.
Oh, yeah.
You use it to make the interiors of ships. Apparently, you use it for everything from, like, MREs, like the field ration tin cans. Or, well, not tin cans, aluminum cans.
Yeah.
But all of this stuff comes in handy.
And pinwheels?
Pinwheels, like the good ones.
Yeah.
If you, but those, man, you can cut your finger off with one of those things.
Yeah.
If you can cripple aluminum production, you can put a serious dent in the wartime effort.
Yeah, it was a smart play.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are also told to bomb locks on the Ohio River between Louisville, Kentucky, and Pittsburgh.
Yes.
So disrupting
transportation.
Sure, that would have been a huge deal.
They would just strap a bomb to a pack mule that was supposed to be pulling a boat along the canal, and kaboom!
So that's Team Eins.
Yeah.
Team Spy. Curling's team, they said, all right, you guys, we want you to concentrate on railroads because we saw during the American Civil War destroying railroads is a great way to cripple an army.
Sure.
They blew, and I don't think that's where they got the idea. You know, it's long been a wartime thing to destroy railroads.
I see.
Pennsylvania Railroad Station at Newark.
Right.
The Horseshoe Bend section of railroad track near Altoona, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Chesapeake and Ohio Railroad, parts of it, the New York Central Railroad's Hellgate Bridge, locks and canals in St. Louis, Cincinnati, Ohio, and the water supply system of New York.
Right, and they were also told to carry out acts of general terrorism to scare people in general.
Yeah.
Bombing Jewish-owned department stores, locker rooms at train stations. Just basically just foment, like, real fear and make Americans feel like, wow, America's being struck.
Yeah, we're vulnerable.
Right. And so the guy said, okay, let's do this. And they shipped out on two different subs from Lorient, France.
U-boats, baby. This is Germany.
Yeah, okay.
Unterseeboats.
U-boats.
Yeah.
They left on U-584 and U-202. And they had each team had four boxes, three of, like, dynamite and other explosives, and then a fourth box of things like timers and detonators and wiring and all that stuff.
Sausages.
Sure, for just in case they got a little hungry on the trip.
Yeah, it was Germans after all.
Right.
They also had a lot of money. Roughly about $1 million today. At the time, each group had 50 grand, and they needed this to travel and to live and to bribe people and pay folks off.
Right, in cash. So they had.
Oh, yeah.
And what's equal to about $1 million today in cash on them,
yeah,
in nothing greater than a $50 bill.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like physically a lot of money. Each member was given 9,000, five of which is very funny, like, team leader is going to hold on to this,
right,
and you can keep four yourself in your money belt,
yep,
and only carry like 450 in your pocket.
Right.
And, that should be enough dough to carry out this plan was the idea.
Yep. And then the team leaders also got handkerchiefs.
Yeah.
That had the names and addresses and things of contacts.
Friendlies.
In invisible ink written on them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So this is like a bona fide spy,
yeah,
espionage, terrorism operation.
Again, great movie in the making so far.
Yep. So and again, I think you said before that, like, Hitler was planning on sending several waves or wave after wave. Apparently, the schedule was every 6 weeks they were going to send one or two teams to the United States.
Yeah, it was a really smart and scary plan.
Yep.
Because catching, you know, a tiny team of four guys who can assimilate as Americans, or at least good German-Americans, that's tough to catch.
Yes. So, Chuck.
Yes.
U-202, which actually left 2 days after U-584— showed up off like 50 yards off the shoreline of Long Island. And
that's just frightening to think about.
Yeah. There was a German U-boat 50 yards off of the shore of Long Island.
Yep.
On June 12th, 1942,
right,
it showed up about 8 in the evening, and it belches out its cargo of boxes of explosives and saboteurs. And the dudes, as they're rowing to shore, they were wearing, like, German military uniforms.
Yeah, I didn't fully this didn't make a ton of sense to me.
Oh, well, if you are caught in plain clothes behind enemy lines, the rules of war state that you can be shot on sight.
But if you're caught as a German Marine, then you're
prisoner
just
of war. And you have to be
I'd
treated.
I'd still say that was taking a chance. I would have dressed as an American.
No, I mean, like, I think that was smart.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have dressed. I would have tried to assimilate, not being like, I'm a German Marine. You're supposed to take me hostage.
Right. But I think G.I. Joe would have been like, well, yep, come on, let's go. I'm taking you hostage. Whereas if the guy had been like, you're a spy, I am allowed to kill you right here and now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't agree with that one. But hey, everyone has their own rules when it comes to saboteuring.
Okay. So.
Sabotaging.
Right. Yeah, sabotaging.
I was just kidding anyway.
And I've learned recently that was of, that word is of recent provenance. Did you know that? Like, it didn't come into use until the beginning of, like, the 20th century.
That makes sense.
I would have thought it was a fairly old word.
Yeah?
Nope.
Did we just think of sabotage, or did we just start calling it that? Like, did they not used to sabotage back in the day?
Yeah, I think they just started calling it that.
Okay.
So, This is Dosh's team, Team Eins?
Teemites.
And they show up on the shore, and they're wearing, again, German military uniforms.
Yeah, which they took off really quickly.
Very quickly.
Once they got on shore.
Yeah, once they saw that, you know, okay, we made it.
Yeah.
The operation has begun. They changed, right?
Yeah, they changed clothes, and they started, I guess they put on their I Love New York shirts, and they started digging big holes in the beach to bury these munitions,
right,
so they could come back as needed when they wanted to blow something new up.
Yes.
They can't just carry that stuff around.
No, and they needed to just stash everything and go and cool out and make sure that no one was, like, onto them or anything like that, and then come back and get it, like you said, as they needed.
Yeah, the plan was to meet up for the two teams to meet up in Cincinnati on July 4th.
Right.
For a baseball game, is what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Reds versus the Braves.
I don't know where the Braves were then. Probably Milwaukee.
Sure.
Okay.
I don't think they moved to Atlanta until the 60s.
Yeah, but I was trying to think of Boston, but they were, that was long before.
So team Einst was changing. They just landed.
Yeah.
They were in the midst of changing when they were discovered by a Coast Guardsman.
Yeah, well, one of them was that Dosh climbed over a dune, and while the other guys were still burying and changing their clothes, and he walked up, and there was a Coast Guard dude, John Cullen, standing right there, and he was like, "Hey, what you doing?"
Right.
Basically.
And the guy was like, "Oh, nothing."
Yeah.
And he apparently was kind of handling things when Berger comes over. And Berger thought that, so the team Einst had been rowed to shore by two German sailors.
Yeah.
And I guess Berger lost track of the German sailors and assumed that they were still there and that for some reason.
It was only Dosh four guys plus the two.
Right. And that Dosh had climbed over the dune to talk to one of the sailors.
Yeah.
So Berger comes up and asks a question in German.
Yeah.
And the Coast Guardsman, John Cullen, is like, why are you speaking German? We're at war with Germany. What's going on?
Yeah.
And at that point, Dosh tells Berger to get out.
Yeah, he said, "You fool. Go back to the others."
Right.
And the guy was probably like, "What others?" Wait a minute.
And so Dosh's story was that they were fishermen, stranded fishermen.
Yeah.
And before he got really suspicious, Cullen, the guy from the Coast Guard, said, "Well, if you guys are stranded fishermen,
that's my job.
Yeah, we have a Coast Guard like house.
Yeah.
Party house.
Uh-huh.
Right up the beach.
We just ordered some pizza.
Come with me. You guys can eat some pizza.
Uh-huh.
And chill out." And Dosh is like, "Well, we don't have any ID on us."
Yeah, we don't have fishing permits either.
Right.
We don't want to get in trouble.
So the guy was like, "Well, you're telling a guy from the Coast Guard that, so you're in trouble, first of all. But secondly, that strikes me as weird." About that time, Berger comes up, asks his question in German, and Dosh sees the writing on the wall and tells Cullen, well, he says, "Do you have a mother?" And Cullen says, "Yes." And he goes, "Do you have a father?" He says, "Yes." And Dosh says, "Well, then I wouldn't want to kill you.
Yeah.
So how about I give you some money? You can forget that this ever happened." And he tries to give him $100, and Cullen says, "Nope."
Yeah, he says, "No, thank you." And he said, he ends up giving him $260, and Cullen basically realized that something was going down, and yeah. I just need to just take this money and act like I'm down with the take
right.
and get out of here.
So...
So he does so.
He does. He skedaddles, and then...
but not before. This is a very key piece, actually.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Dosh grabbed his flashlight before he left and shined it on his own face and said, "You will be meeting me in East Hampton sometime soon. Do you know who I am?" And the guy was like, "No, I don't know who you are." And he said, "My name is George John Davis."
Which was a lie.
Well, it was his real alias for the mission, though.
Hmm.
So, like, he actually gave him his real alias. And he said, "What's your name?" And Cullen said, "Frank Collins," which
was a lie.
Which was a lie. Pretty quick thinking. And basically, he scrambled back, and Dosh came back over and was like, "Little scene there, guys. I totally took care of it.
Right.
Should not be a big deal.
Don't even worry about it. Pay the guy $260.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah. So everybody finished burying these boxes, which they did. And Cullen ran off and went and grabbed some of his fellow Coast Guardsmen. By the time they got back, Team Einst had left.
Yeah, they went and caught a train.
But apparently, and this is another thing, so the U-boat that dropped off Team Einst had grounded itself on a sandbar.
Yeah.
And was sitting there, like, trying to get back out to sea because dawn was
coming. You just rocked back and forth in your chair. Was that?
That's what it looked like.
Was that the method? They had all the guys in there?
Yeah, just moving to the left, side to side.
To the right.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And finally, the tide came in just enough for them to dislodge themselves and go back out to sea just in time. But apparently, Cullen and the other Coast Guardsmen who came back caught sight of this U-boat heading back out to sea.
Yeah, not good.
Right?
Yeah.
No. German U-boat off the coast of Long Island, just ran into some guys who are speaking German and tried to pay you off.
Sure.
And then now all of a sudden, in the moonlight, you can see the ghostly outlines of four freshly dug holes in the sand.
Yeah.
Let's see what's in there.
Yeah, I wonder if I saw that about the boat being stuck, but I couldn't find if that was like if they could have gotten away, you know, it could have all changed. They may not have been that suspicious.
I think that Cullen was suspicious. Yeah, he was definitely coming back.
But seeing the U-boat was just icing on the cake,
exactly.
I guess. Okay. Yep. So the other dudes had hopped they dug up the holes and they found the stuff and said, okay, this is a huge deal.
Yeah, we just found a trove of explosives and German military uniforms buried on the beach like 60 miles from New York.
Yeah, so toot sweet, by 10:23 that morning, those boxes were in the office of New York City Police Captain John Bayless, who then promptly got in touch with the FBI. And by noon that day, 13 hours after they had arrived, the FBI had all that stuff in custody, and J. Edgar Hoover said, we need to get a blackout on the news so these guys don't get wise to this.
Right.
And we need to get the largest manhunt in FBI history underway.
And they did. And we will explore that and all the ways the FBI got some lucky breaks on this right after these messages. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Do you love fashion? Do you love getting compliments on how well you're dressed? Are you always seeking the latest trends? Then we're talking to you. BostonProper.com is your fashion destination and the only place to go for all those nods, head turns, and new styles. No matter the day, season, or occasion, Boston Proper has what you're looking for. Sophisticated, confident clothing designed to flatter and get noticed. So visit BostonProper.com now and start creating your perfect wardrobe. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
All right. So Team Eintz, let's recap here. They are in Manhattan.
Yeah.
They go shopping at Macy's, of course.
Yeah.
Because they got a lot of cash.
All they had with them was the clothes, the civilian clothes they brought, and all that cash.
Yeah.
That was it. Everything else is buried back at the beach, but is now in FBI custody, unbeknownst to these guys.
That's right. So they go shopping at Macy's. They split into, they said, let's split up into pairs because that makes sense. Kieran and Hank checked into the Hotel Martinique. Dosh and Berger went to the Governor Clinton Hotel.
Governor Bill Clinton.
And I don't think so. And unless he was named after the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
You never know.
That's why he always wanted to be governor.
So apparently, Dosh and Berger met. He summoned Berger to his hotel room up on a tall floor and opened the window and said, I've got a plan, and I'm going to tell you about it. And if you're on board, you're on board. But if you're not, then one of us is leaving through the door, one of us is leaving through the window. He basically threw down the gauntlet.
To Berger?
To Berger.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and so Berger, he basically said, I would like to turn and sabotage the sabotage.
Right.
And go against Germany, and because America's kind of great.
So Dosh was going to kill Berger if Berger didn't go along with it.
That's what he said, and apparently Berger had the choice too. Like, or I can defeat you and throw you out the window.
Or you can triumph and be the living victor.
Yeah, so I think Berger was just on board. And they said that in this article that Dosh probably was telling the truth, that he was really, this was his idea from the beginning.
So here's the question. Like, historically speaking, Dosh has been seen as a genuine betrayer of this mission.
Sure.
But when he became a genuine betrayer of the mission is at issue still, according to this History Net article. Either he knew it before they even landed, and that is why he showed his face and gave his real alias to John Cullen on the beach.
Which makes sense.
Or his encounter with John Cullen on the beach rattled him enough that he was like, this is never going to work. We're already dead in the water.
That's a quick turn.
So now I'm going to go ahead and betray it.
Yeah, I say that he was in on it from the beginning. That's my feeling.
Because he was snoozing in spy school?
I don't know. It seems like a really quick, like they just land on the beach. 5 minutes later, he meets a guy and he's like, wait a minute, it's off. I'm going to betray Germany.
Right.
It just seemed, I don't know, a little too hasty.
Well, maybe he had nerves of...
spaghetti?
Yeah. Cooked spaghetti even.
So he says, here's the plan. Monday,
this is Dosh to Berger, right?
Yeah, he said on Monday, I'm going to go to.
Had they closed the window by now?
Yeah, I think so. They went to dinner and everything was good.
Oh.
And he said, I'm going to go to Washington and meet with J. Edgar Hoover. This should be pretty easy to get that meeting.
The man himself.
Yeah,
I hear he wears nothing but a cape around the office.
And he said, you go back to the other two guys and just sort of occupy them for a little while I'm going to D.C. and requesting a meeting with the FBI, the head of the FBI.
Right. So. Berger says, let's do this. Dosh says, okay. It's Sunday. And Dosh doesn't make his way to D.C. until Thursday morning.
Yes.
Instead, he goes. So remember, he was a waiter in America.
Well, he called the FBI first, at least.
Right. And the reason why he called first is he was a little worried because apparently back at training camp in the woods, Walter Kopp, had said, you guys don't need to worry. We have a man on the inside of the FBI. So Dosh was worried that if he called or if he just showed up at FBI headquarters.
He'd talk to that one guy.
Right. Out of all the FBI guys, he would have that level of bad luck. Which from what I understand, that was a good concern for him to have. So he called the New York Bureau first and said, I'm a German dude. I've got information for J. Edgar Hoover. Tell him I'm coming. And then he hung up. And he went to a club for waiters and then played pinochle for like two straight days.
Yeah, I think he was probably gambling.
That's what I think too.
Because if I'm not mistaken with the math, he ended up with more money than he came with.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he went and gambled with sabotage money?
I think so.
Man, that guy is some serious cojones. Yeah.
He's pretty awesome. So eventually he said, all right, I got to go to Washington. This pinochle game has dried up. So he hopped on the Acela Express for Washington.
Sure.
Which I highly recommend, by the way.
Man, train travel is awesome.
It was great.
Regional train travel is a delight.
Such a delight. And especially from Boston to New York, you just ride along the coastline there, and it's just lovely.
It is lovely.
Sailboats and Cape Cod houses on points.
Yep.
Lobster rolls.
Yeah.
It's nice, good stuff. All right, so Dosh has arrived by train, finally. By this point, Team Svi has landed.
Right, these are the pros.
Yeah.
They show up in Florida, and they're like, let's do this for real.
And I imagine Ponte Vedra Beach in 1943 was a pretty low-key scenario.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah, I would think so.
So they are 25 miles south of Jacksonville. They bury their crates, no sweat, hop on a bus, go to Jacksonville. They split up from that point. Two went to Cincinnati, two went to Chicago.
Yeah, and like, I mean, they were doing okay. No muss. Yeah. There wasn't like any, no one was calling the FBI. Like, they were in it to win it, basically.
Yeah, why? They should have done, Team Einz should have done their recon beforehand. The U-boat should have not pulled up next to a Coast Guard station, first of all.
That would have been one thing. Yeah, because that Coast Guard station was like half a mile away.
Yeah, it was there. All right, maybe they had bad intel.
Yeah.
So Dosh gets to D.C., checks into the Mayflower Hotel.
Yeah, this is the same day that Kerling's group lands in Pontevedra.
Yeah.
It's a big day.
Huge day.
Okay.
And he in D.C. said, all right, I'm going to call the FBI again because got to meet with Hoover. And he reached out to a Dwayne Traynor. And, of course, Traynor says, you know, this is probably not a legitimate call. We get these kind of weird calls all the time. But just in case.
Let's go pick him up.
Yeah, let's see what's going on.
It's here. A slow day at headquarters.
Yeah, exactly.
So they go and pick up the German, and they bring him to the Justice Department. And Dosh said that he was basically bounced from agent to agent. He was kind of a hot potato. Nobody wanted to deal with him. And finally, he convinced these guys enough to end up in the office of Mickey Ladd, who was running the manhunt for the spies. And the head of the spies was now sitting in his office.
Yeah, telling him he's the head of the spies.
And he still didn't quite believe him.
Yeah.
Until Dash said, oh, yeah, well, here, let me show you this, and dumped out $84,000 on Ladd's desk.
Yeah.
And Ladd said, I'm so pleased you came in today.
Right. Come with me.
Yeah.
So Dosh, here's his idea is, I want to talk to Hoover himself because I'm going to be a hero, and I might even get like a Medal of Honor out of this.
Right. Like maybe J. Edgar will have me over to his house for dinner.
Yeah.
Who knows what could come of this?
Well,
ticker
sure.
Tape parade?
Uh-huh.
They threw those all the time back then.
Yeah.
So the FBI gets him talking. He does get to meet Hoover briefly.
Sure.
But a couple of other agents take his deposition, which lasts for 13 hours.
Yeah.
Before he finished, he had told them about Berger and where Berger was, and they went and picked up Berger.
Yeah, while he was still telling them the story, they were already at Berger's hotel staking him out.
Yep. So before they picked up Berger, they were staking him out, like you said, and they watched Berger go meet Kieran and Heinck, and so they just arrested all three of them, and all of a sudden, they have Team Einz in custody within, like, a day of Dosh walking into FBI headquarters.
Yeah, it didn't go so well for Team Einz.
No.
No. So
well, when the team leader betrays you,
yeah.
Like, yeah, you're in trouble.
You're toast. So on June 22nd, Hoover wrote to FDR and said, you know what, sir, we've caught all the members of this group that landed on Long Island.
Pretty great, huh,
FDR? And we are awesome. He didn't mention that the guy turned himself in and told him where everyone was.
Right.
And so FDR was just thought that Hoover had done like a bang-up job, basically.
Yeah, he's like, way to go. Way to do your job.
Exactly. He lied, pretty much.
So Dash had no real leads or anything about Team
Zwei.
Zwei.
Yeah.
But he did have a handkerchief.
That's right.
That had contacts on invisible ink.
And surprisingly, he hadn't blown his nose in it.
Right.
At this point.
But he couldn't remember how you were supposed to get the invisible ink to become visible.
No.
Luckily, the FBI had a crack team of lab techs on this thing, and they figured it out. And now all of a sudden, they had the names and addresses of all of the German contacts for these teams right there in their hands, thanks to Dosh.
Yeah.
Right?
So they were all obviously staked out, just waiting on Team Einz, or I'm sorry, Team Zwei, to meet up with these people.
Right, which they did. But first, Team Zwei did some other weird stuff, like Herbert Haupt. He was in Chicago, where, again, he'd lived since he was five.
Mm-hmm.
And Haupt decided that he would buy a Pontiac car.
Yeah, he went to his parents' house.
Right. And told his dad everything.
Yeah, had his dad buy him this car.
Yep, and he proposed to his girlfriend. Remember, he had left during the war, and he was an able-bodied man over age 18.
Yeah.
And so the local draft board wanted to know where he was. So he drops by FBI headquarters to clear up his draft problem, says, I'm back. Sorry, I've already registered with my local draft board. No need to track me anymore. I'm just an all-American boy.
Yeah.
And the FBI was like, yeah, sure, thank you for coming by.
Right.
And then tailed them on the way out.
Yeah.
And then he led them to at least one other team member, right?
Yeah. And while this was going on, Curling and Werner Thiel went to New York and met up with a friend named Helmut Leiner because they wanted to have sex with a lady. And so Leiner hooked him up with his mistress, said, here, have sex with her. And he said, great, thanks. And he ended up traveling with that woman, Curling did.
Mm-hmm.
And within a couple of days after Dosh surrendered, they spotted Curling because they were trailing him at a bar where he met with Thiel, and they arrested both of those guys.
Right.
So two down on Team Zwei. Herbert Haupt, I'm sorry, three down at this point.
Right, Haupt was taken down in Chicago.
Yeah, the only one left at this point was Hermann Neubauer.
Right, and Neubauer spent his time in, was it in New York?
I think he was in Chicago.
Okay, you're probably right. He just went to the movies over and over again.
Yep.
That's what he did. He was apparently lonely, so he sought out some friends of his wife's whom he hadn't really met before.
Yeah. He told them everything.
Told them everything. Gave them his money for safekeeping.
Unbelievable.
But kept enough to go to the movies a bunch. So basically, he kept a dollar.
Right.
And
plus popcorn.
Okay, $1.50.
Yeah.
And then he was, I think he just come back from the movies when the FBI picked him up, right?
Yep.
So Dash, remember, is sure that, like, he's going to be feted as a hero,
mm-hmm.
that J. Edgar Hoover is probably, like, thinking about him right then.
Yeah.
He's just, like, basically like Ralphie in A Christmas Story, just daydreaming about, like, how he's going to be carried around on everyone's shoulders.
He probably should have been.
So,
I mean, he's the reason why this went south, because he said, you know what, I'm siding with America.
Sure. The thing is, Hoover,
he didn't care.
J. Edgar Hoover, not only did he not care,
yeah.
Hoover was taking the credit for all of this unraveling.
Oh, yeah, so he had to bury this.
Right. He couldn't let Dosh be known as this guy who had come and given him this whole thing on a platter.
Right.
Or else Hoover would look like an idiot.
Yeah.
And Dosh might very well have been hailed as at least a slimy collaborator rather than a criminal.
Yeah.
After everybody was rounded up, the FBI arrested Dosh. And Dosh must have been quite surprised by this.
Well, yeah, they arrested him, but they said, hey, just go along with this. You'll get a full presidential pardon after 6 months.
Oh, really?
Just sort of play along with the arrest. And he was like, oh, okay.
I see. So put me in the jail with the other guys so they don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
And he didn't want to get. Hoover was like, yeah, sure.
Well, because that jibed with Hoover's plan to keep it all quiet still.
Exactly.
It was working out great for Hoover.
It didn't work out great for Dosh or the others, Chuck.
No.
So, FDR wanted to make sure that he could get the death penalty and that this could be kept quiet. So he formed a military tribunal to try these guys. And it was the first one since Lincoln had been assassinated.
Yeah. It was a big deal. So the prosecutor was Attorney General Francis Biddle. Chief defense was Colonel Kenneth Royal. They defense argued initially for a civilian trial. That was quickly scrapped, and they said, no, we're going to move forward with the tribunal.
Yep.
And held the trial at the Justice Department in Washington during the month of July 1942, and basically said, we know the whole, there's not going to be much of a trial, fellas.
Right.
We know everything because you told us everything.
Exactly.
You are coming here to sabotage and blow up our junk, and you're in big trouble.
Right, and the prosecutor sought the death penalty as expected, but it was up to FDR to decide when and where. And to do that, he had to have a transcript of the trial. And when he got this transcript of the trial, it became obvious that Hoover hadn't really done anything.
Yeah,
but apparently, I mean, FDR never called him out on it in public.
No, which was a nice thing to do, I guess.
I guess.
Because that would have just been further embarrassment for, like, the whole country, you know?
Yeah.
So they kept that quiet. But at this point, it was news all over the country. They weren't keeping it quiet with the press.
No.
And the American public was way in favor of the death penalty. In fact, there was an open letter published in one newspaper calling for them to be fed to Gargantua, the gorilla at the Ringling Brothers Circus.
Because that's fair to Gargantua, too.
Yeah, eat those Germans.
Well, instead, they electrocuted six of them on August 8th at the district jail in Washington, D.C.
That's right.
including Herbert Haupt, who was just like, I just wanted a Pontiac.
Yeah. I just wanted to see my parents.
Right.
Berger and Dosh were spared the death penalty because they basically had a hard time proving in court that they didn't, you know,
fully intend to betray the operation.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So they did not get electrocuted. They were sentenced, Berger, to hard labor for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And Dosh was given 30 years, but President Truman commuted their sentences, released them, and deported them.
Had them shipped to West Germany.
Yeah.
West Berlin.
Said, don't come back.
Nope. Get out.
And the other guys were buried in a potter's field, by the way, in, outside Washington.
Yes. Sadly. Which is now the D.C. Municipal Water Treatment Plant.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where they were buried?
Yeah.
Just right now they're part of the system, I guess.
And so Dosh and Berger go back to Germany, and Berger starts, like, feeding the media the story.
Yeah, basically, like 5 years later,
and blames Dosh for the deaths of these other six German patriots,
sure,
who were saboteurs, right? And Dosh tried to publicly clear himself. He first sought a pardon in America so that he could come back.
Yeah, he really wanted to get out of Germany.
Yeah, I can imagine. America said, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to pardon you. We're still mad at you. Germany said, we're mad at you too. And so he just kind of faded out of the public spotlight.
Yep. He ended up dying in 1992 at the age of 89. And I didn't see any follow-up for
Berger.
For Berger.
No.
I think he wasn't quite as vilified as Dosh was.
Right.
For sure.
But that was not the last time the Germans sent saboteurs ashore. There was at least one other ill-fated attempt in 1944. Another German submarine. These are expensive boats, man.
Yeah.
They are really taking a massive risk to drop off a couple of saboteurs.
Yeah.
But they did it again off of Maine.
Yep.
In a snowstorm. And two former American residents, German-Americans, were sent off under the Maine coast in a snowstorm. They were seen by a local Boy Scout using a compass during the snowstorm on the side of the road, and the Boy Scout was suspicious, so he traced their tracks all the way back to the shoreline when they come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to call the police.
So nice. These guys, the Boy Scouts actually caught these guys?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
What's ironic is one of these German-American saboteurs was a Boy Scout himself. So it was like Boy Scout on Boy Scout tattling.
Wow.
They got picked up immediately, and as far as everybody knows, that's the last time Germany ever tried that.
Yeah, I think the idea was that Hitler was like, this is embarrassing.
Yeah, let's just focus on the rocket program.
Yeah, we can't keep sending guys to the United States who immediately get there and start doing stupid things.
Right. Giving themselves up.
Yeah. Going to see mom and dad.
Seeing in movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, playing pinochle. So that's it. That's the story of the time the Nazis invaded Florida and New York and Maine. If you want to know more about that, check out HistoryNet, check out Damn Interesting, check out all sorts of stuff.
Yes.
Just search it. You'll find all sorts of cool things on it.
I would not look for the movie coming soon to a theater near you.
No, the third act, non-existent.
No.
Not really.
No, it's just kind of a letdown.
Yeah.
Doesn't end with a bang.
No. It ends with Germany being mad at them and America, too. Let's see. I think I said Germany's mad, which means it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this our cutest, youngest fan, and it includes an audio clip. Hey, guys. Did you hear this?
Yes.
It's pretty great.
Yes.
My son Archer is 2.5 years old. Just 2.5. We listen to podcasts together while I rock him to sleep at nap time and bedtime. Anytime he's tired, he says, Mommy, let's go Archer's room and listen to podcasts. I usually rotate between Stuff You Should Know and other How Stuff Works podcasts. He's never seemed to have a preference until about 2 weeks ago when I put another podcast on. He said, no, Mommy, not that podcast, just Stuff You Know, the red one. You guys are his favorite, which is fine with me, and I have even attached a voice recording of him requesting your podcast. It was not rehearsed, mind you. It's just me asking him before his nap time today. And that is from Shauna, and Shauna gave us permission to hear from Archer. So let's go ahead and play that clip right now.
Okay, are you ready to take a nap?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to listen to a podcast?
Yeah.
Okay, which podcast?
Stuff You Should Know.
Stuff You Should Know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Aww.
Wow.
Pretty cute.
Holy cow.
Kid knows his stuff.
Unbelievable. So, Archer, if you can understand what's going on here by the sound coming out of the speakers.
We know you don't yet form memories, but hopefully this episode will be a documentation of it.
That's right, Archer. So good luck in life. You are off to a great start. And now take your nap, little buddy.
Nice. Well, if you want to share with us how your cute kid loves Stuff You Should Know, we love hearing that, right, Chuckers?
We do.
You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Do you love fashion? Do you love getting compliments on how well you're dressed? Are you always seeking the latest trends? Then we're talking to you. BostonProper.com is your fashion destination and the only place to go for all those nods, head turns, and new styles. No matter the day, season, or occasion, Boston Proper has what you're looking for. Sophisticated, confident clothing designed to flatter and get noticed. So visit BostonProper.com now and start creating your perfect wardrobe. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.